touch with you. I wrote the wildfire protection plan, community wildfire protection plan to White Oak 45 years ago this summer.
Okay.
Do you have a copy?
I don't have one anymore.
It would be great to hear.
Yeah, I'll touch base with you.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that, the one presentation where you ran into the concept of fragility. And I was kind of trying to get my head wrapped around that and how that contrasted with what risk was in my mind. I thought something risky is kind of fragile. But, and I was wondering if, I don't know, that's a semantic question, I suppose, just sort of trying to get everybody on the same page with the concept. But how would that interplay with the other term that seems to pop up in some conversations or some programs that I hear about? And that would be resilience. You know, fire resilient landscape sounds like something that's not as fragile.
Andrew, take that.
Yeah. So I guess I'll take it in two parts maybe. So the first part being kind of how, what's the difference between something that's risky and something that's fragile? I think in terms of the risk triangle that we saw in some of the presentations, I would say that the fragility piece is the susceptibility. So if you take a value and how susceptible is it to the effects of fire? Whereas the riskiness of it would also include the likelihood and the hazard, it would kind of include all three. So I think if I were to kind of rephrase that, I think the fragility aspect is really zeroing in on the susceptibility to the almost to the neglect of the likelihood. And the second part, resilience. Oh yeah. So the resilience. I think Taleb would make the argument that resilience. So he's got that kind of triad: fragile on one end, resilient or robust in the middle, and then beyond robust. So something that would be improved, not just a resilient. So he would define, I think, resilience and robustness very similar. So something that bounces back after a shock. So at best or at worst, it's unharmed. It kind of comes out just fine either way. Whereas something that is anti-fragile would actually improve given those shocks of resistance. For example, like our bodies are anti-fragile to some degree. When we work out, when we lift weights, we're stressing our body, and our bodies overcompensate that to build muscle. If we neglect those stressors and we sit on the couch, our bodies, you know, they start to tank, right? So our bodies need that those stressors, that randomness, to actually improve. So in that sense, our bodies are anti-fragile. There's other things that we probably think of that are anti-fragile. The question is, can our landscapes, can our ecosystems, can our assets, the highly valued resources, can they become anti-fragile? Meaning, we are immune to the error of prediction. So can they become a state where it's like, to some degree, we don't really care what the fire does because we're ready for it.
So in other words, you're not concerned with quantifying the intensity of the incident. In other words, that's a slide.
I would say that's probably taken into account when you look at the susceptibility of it. So susceptible to what? So at what level do we want it to be anti-fragile? You know, because we can't be, I would say we can't harden our assets so much that we can take whatever. There's probably a limit to that. So I think the severity of the fire, the intensity of the fire, those kinds of things need to be incorporated when we're looking at the values that we're trying to protect or the landscapes that we're trying to manage. But I think it would be not, at the very best, not putting a lot of weight on the probability of some rare event happening, because that's the part that I don't think we know very well. I mean, just in general, we're not good at predicting the future. And that goes to that quote kind of originally, is that we can predict things that are normal or average pretty well, But it's the rare events, it's the extreme events that we're not good at. And those are the ones that actually shape us more.
Caleb, would you say that the approach that you talked about in terms of your approach to your planning process would be very much focused on the susceptibility?
Absolutely, yeah, it really is. And that was done, I didn't really talk about it specifically, but that was done intentionally to some degree, and also just because it didn't seem all that necessary to get into those really, into the minutiae, I guess, of separating out what's slightly more probable than not. And so I think the approach that we took very deliberately was just sort of relative risk ranking. It's really hazard ranking of or hazard identification, because there's for one thing, we're heavily constricted by the quality of our data. So if we were to try to get into really fine-grained assessment of where the fire is going to be more likely to be slightly more intense than somewhere else, it's a lot of false precision given the quality of our fuel maps and of our weather data. So it kind of went that to that place automatically, and I think that I'm pretty happy with that right now. I'm still interested to sort of hear, just to see what more we would get from an approach that was more holistic, really take on it, really identifying what's the slightly more likely place to have a slightly higher chance of
other questions?
Yeah, this is probably a question for either Mark or Andrew, but it's about that risk triangle you were talking about, likelihood, intensity, susceptibility. So if you overlay climate and changes occurring on that triangle, how would you describe climate affecting each of those three legs? And then, I'm just curious what you think, how that would affect the risk piece, and is it equal on each of those three pieces of that triangle? And then the other thought I had was, we were talking about the extreme events, you just gave us an example of the two parks. It seemed like you could use those as reference points to model extreme events in the current risk analysis for because you're right, you need the models to create extreme events, but we've got examples of extreme events all around the country. And it seemed like you could find human modeling to reflect some of those extremes. So there's really a couple of questions there.
I think Andy can probably speak to this a little better, but as far as the climate change piece, I believe there's probably a way to incorporate it into the FSIM model and the calibrations that go into that. The wildfire risk assessment, quantitative wildfire risk assessment, intends to be stable for about 5 years. If we address climate change over the 1 to 5 years, I'm not certain. But beyond that, I think it has to be a piece of how it affects each side of the triangle. It depends on what climate change does. That's tough me to say. But I got to believe that the susceptibility piece, and I'm really digging this fragility conversation, because I do believe we spend a ton of time and a lot of effort modeling fire behavior with information that is inherent to errors, and inherent to weather fluctuations, and inherent to climate change. So I think we focus on the HVRAs, the resources and assets, and their resilience or fragility, or probably think about that. That's what we do.
Can I just add, the triangle of risk there seems like a great concept, and there's a very similar concept that takes the ISO 31000 risk management standard It's a bit of a different framing of that. It's a risk matrix, and it's likelihood and consequence, and then breaks up the consequence into vulnerability, severity, several other components. If you like the concept of the triangle, I'd suggest looking for that ISO 31000 risk matrix. And it's the same idea that if you knock one side out of it, one element of that out, then you have zero risk. Same sort of triangle.
So I'll address the piece about how the three parts of the triangle might be addressed or might be used to address future scenarios. I think you heard some representation that the landscape will be changing with each additional fire. We already know that, we see that, we depend on that. And that there are models that actually are gaining that very thing. I think Mike mentioned that they have a proposal in Yukon territories to begin to look at that sort of futuring prospect. And so that really, as your landscape changes, that hazard, that fire intensity will change based on your perceptions of that change. The weather scenarios will probably be played out in the probabilities. You know, how frequently will you get fires? Where will they occur? And what are the weather conditions under which they'll burn? The tools themselves don't lend themselves to that kind of thing very well. And so we're probably talking about successive runs. We're talking about comparative results. Perhaps there'll be new tools coming along to actually embed those kinds of analyses in these tools. But I see them being played out largely in those two pieces, with perhaps even a role for how our communities change, you know, additional development, so those kinds of things changing the susceptibility. That help?
Yeah.
Not an easy answer.
Any other questions? All right. I think we have a break scheduled again at this point. I'd say.